Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Brian Koberger's defense team just broke their silence, not to talk about justice for the University of Idaho students he admitted to taking the lives of, not to address the families still living inside that grief. Their first public appearance, public statement, rather, since the sentencing, the first words Ann Taylor and her team have put on record since Koberger was handed 4 consecutive life terms was aimed squarely at one of their own. A forensic scientist they hired, a man named Brent Turvey. And what they said about him carries a kind of fury you rarely see from defense attorneys turning on an expert they personally retained. They called his conduct appalling. They accused him of violating a confidentiality agreement he signed. They said he's now speaking publicly about topics that remain confidential, many of which they claim fall outside his area of expertise. And the reason this matters, the reason any of this should concern you, is what Turvey is actually saying. Because at the center of this very public war between a defense team and their own hired gun is the single most critical piece of physical evidence in the entire Koberger case. The K-Bar knife sheet found in Madison Mogan's bed, and whether it ever should have been allowed into a courtroom at all. That's what they're bringing up. I'm not here to express this way or that way, although I think it should have been admitted, and it was going to be admitted. But it is certainly interesting to hear the backstory, to hear its origin story, if you will. And keep in mind, there are far more pieces of evidence in this case than the knife sheath. The question was never answered, though. No judge ruled on it. No jury weighed it, because Koberger pled guilty weeks before trial, and the door to every unresolved forensic question slammed shut behind him. Now Turvey is prying it back open with his cold living hands, and the people who hired him want him to stop. Interesting. We're going to get into this, and as we do, give me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Let's talk about who Brent Turvey is and what he says he found, because the credentials matter here. Turvey holds a PhD in criminology and a Master of Science in Forensic Science. He's a senior partner at Forensic Solutions LLC, where he's worked cases involving homicides, SAs, staged crime scenes, and serial offenses since 1996. According to Fox News Digital, he has testified as an expert at more than 70 trials. He's authored multiple textbooks on criminal profiling, forensic victimology, and crime reconstruction, published by including one of the largest academic publishers in the world, Elsevier. He's currently serving as a senior forensic advisor to the Dubai Police Criminal Profiling Unit and has consulted for agencies in the United States, Australia, China, Korea, and across Latin America. This is not a commentator with a podcast and an opinion. This is a working forensic scientist with 3 decades in the field. He's credentialed. He's experienced. Ann Taylor's defense team retained Turvey specifically for crime scene analysis. And according to their public statement, his role was narrow, provide an opinion about the crime scene, nothing else. He signed a confidentiality agreement on October 30th of 2024. That agreement, the defense says, remains in effect. Turvey has not been released from it. But what Turvey reportedly found, and what he's now discussing publicly, goes to the foundation of the prosecution's physical case. His core allegation centers on the chain of custody documentation for the knife sheath. That sheath recovered from inside the King Road house where Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, Zanna Kernodal, and Ethan Chapin were fatally stabbed in November of 2022, was sent to the Idaho State Police Crime Lab in Meridian. Technicians located a single source of male touch DNA on the leather sheath. That DNA was later confirmed as Brian Koberger's. It was the prosecution's most powerful piece of physical evidence, the link between the man and the crime scene. And according to Turvey, the evidence bag that transported the sheath to the lab tells a different story than it should. He stated publicly that the chain of custody label, the documentation that tracks every hand that touched that evidence from the crime scene to the lab, appears to have been filled in after the fact by a single person using one pen. The label reportedly contains six recorded exchanges spanning November 13th and November 16th, 2022, all in similar handwriting. Standard forensic protocol requires that each person who handles a piece of evidence signs for it in real time, creating a live record of custody. What Turvey describes, again, describes, is the opposite. A record allegedly reconstructed from memory? Not documented as it happened? In his professional opinion, as he told the Idaho Statesman, that documentation would have rendered the knife sheath inadmissible in most jurisdictions had the case gone to trial. He went further in an interview with Fox News Digital, saying the sheath should have been ruled inadmissible by any competent jurist. He used the word manufactured to describe the chain of custody. He used the words fabricated and falsified to describe what he believes someone did to the evidence paperwork. Again, those are his words. Those are his allegations. Not court evaluated or validated those claims. No court has done that. This is his take on it, if you will. And there may be many reasons for the way that label is. I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know whose DNA was on that thing. And because somebody maybe didn't fill out a label correctly, or they filled it out all later, doesn't erase the fact that Brian Koberger's DNA was on the knife sheath. Well, what if somebody planted it there? Yeah. Just not buying that at all. What about him stalking the house? What about all of it? What about all of it? There's a lot more to the case than knife sheath. If Brian Koberger thought he had a chance in hell, he wouldn't have agreed to his deal. In my opinion. But hey, it's important that we hear all the voices, all of the claims, all of the concerns, because it is important that facts remain facts. And if this knife sheath was handled incorrectly or documented incorrectly, that's a good point to make. This is how so many cases fall apart, how horrible people get set free because of stupid bureaucratic office-like discrepancies. T's not being crossed, I's not being dotted, essentially. All of those little things matter in a criminal case to this volume. And look, I'm not going to be remotely surprised if the Moscow PD wasn't the greatest at that. They didn't really have a lot of experience in this sort of realm. It's not an excuse. It's not a dismissal of that. But I'm telling you, reps, Either they have them or you don't. And when you don't, stupid mistakes happen. It doesn't invalidate the evidence in that bag because somebody labeled it incorrectly. And again, it's an assumption to even say that that was even incorrectly done. It could have been the same damn person handling the same piece of evidence over and over with the same handwriting, using the same colored pen at different points in times. That is possible. This is someone's interpretation, seeing someone's handwriting going, oh my gosh, this was done at different times. Look, if you look at my notepad here with all of my writing on it, it's going to look like my writing. I could have done it all in one day. I could have done it over the course of months. That's open to someone's interpretation. I can tell you I did it over the course of months, but one could say I did it all in one day. I think that's true for anybody's handwriting. Now, typically, yeah, you do have multiple people handling these sort of things in larger departments. I don't know the answer to this question. It's interesting. It's certainly something to be discussed. And that's why I think it's important that we bring this up and don't mince past it. Even Ann Taylor made a statement about it. But I'm curious to get your thoughts in the comment section as we continue to work through this. Moscow Police Chief Anthony Dellinger, who was a captain overseeing detectives at the time of the investigation, pushed back on this directly. He told the Idaho Statesman that his department hasn't used handwritten chain of custody logs in at least a decade. Moscow police write electronic barcodes and green stickers with evidence numbers, and that system, he said, worked properly in this case. So handwriting might just be somebody, what does the system say? Okay, now we have it here on this piece of paper. System says this, okay. That's not exactly a flaw. That's just someone taking the digital information and putting it into a physical form on a bag. Sorry. Idaho legal experts unassociated with the case have also stated that Turvey's allegations appear slightly unfounded. The Turvey's claim doesn't exist in isolation. They're now embedded in a book. And that book is what detonated the entire situation. Former FBI agent Christopher Whitcomb released Broken Plea, the explosive search for the truth behind the Idaho murders through Harper's Select. Whitcomb spent more than two decades with the Bureau, served on the FBI's hostage rescue team, was an early member of the Bureau's violent criminal apprehension program, worked as an on-air analyst for NBC, and co-hosted CNBC, a CNBC program that earned a Peabody nomination. For this book, he reviewed thousands of pages of previously undisclosed files, police reports, photographs, body camera footage, laboratory results, autopsy findings, forensic and DNA analysis, unpublished interviews, surveillance logs, and experts' reports that were never presented in court because the case never went to trial. Whitcomb's reporting builds on Turvey's chain of custody concerns and goes further. He documents what he describes as two separate sets of markings on an evidence bag. One set on the sealed tape, another on a label sticker affixed later. The earliest visible date on the bag shows the initials BP, reportedly belonging to the lead detective, Brett Payne. And the date, 11-14-22, written over the evidence tape. A separate signature appears to be from Shannon Arredondo, a forensic specialist with the Idaho State Police Crime Lab, dated November 16th. The label sticker, according to Turvey's analysis, as reported by Whitcomb, was filled in sometime after the fact. And then there's the hair. According to Turvey and Whitcomb, hair was photographed at the crime scene, reportedly in or beneath Ethan Chapin's hand. Turvey traveled to Moscow, Idaho to review evidence in person and identified that hair. According to his public statements, the FBI lab determined that the hair did not belong to Brian Koberger. He told Fox News Digital directly that Koberger was excluded. And according to Whitcomb, that hair has reportedly never been fully processed or tested beyond that exclusion. Whose hair it is remains unknown. The book also documents competing expert conclusions that would have collided at trial. T. Paulette Sutton, a forensic scientist specializing in blood spatter analysis who worked for the prosecution, concluded in her peer-reviewed report that there was no physical evidence to exclude a single perpetrator. Turvey reportedly believes there were at least two. Wickham notes that the defense narrative placed the attacks at under 5 minutes, while Turvey reportedly suspected the crime scene cleanup alone would have taken hours. A timeline that sits uneasily against the prosecution's assertion that Koberger was inside for approximately 15 minutes. Wickham himself has stated that there was no undisclosed evidence beyond what prosecutors outlined, and that Koberger reportedly chose to plead guilty on his own. None of these contradictions were ever resolved in a courtroom. Every single one of them died the moment Koberger entered his plea, which brings us to the war that's now playing out in public. Ann Taylor, Alyssa Massoth, and Bika Barlow, Koberger's defense attorneys, sent their statements to the Idaho Statesman. Their language was deliberate and cutting. They wrote that the agreement with Turvey was crystal clear. All materials and any opinions he developed were to remain confidential. They wrote that his public statements fall outside ethical and legal norms applied to experts in criminal cases. They said his reliability should be judged through the lens of his conduct. And they made a point of minimizing his role. He was one of many experts hired late in the case with a narrow scope. Turvey responded the same day in an interview with the Statesman. He rejected every accusation. He said nothing he shared was outside of what law enforcement had already released through their own discovery. Data dump, he said the defense team's statement was deflection, a way to redirect attention away from the real forensic problems in the case. He challenged Taylor directly to identify specific violations of his confidentiality agreement. And then he said something that landed with an edge. That if Taylor gets too specific about what he allegedly violated, she could get herself into trouble. And here's the part that remains the entire conflict. According to the spokesman review, Turvey said he raised his chain of custody concerns to Taylor's defense team before the plea deal, and that it did not pursue his findings. He says he still has never received a straight answer from Taylor about that decision. Think about what that means. If Turvey's account is accurate, this isn't a disgruntled expert going rogue after a case closed. This is a forensic scientist who reportedly flagged what he believed was a fatal flaw in the prosecution's most critical piece of evidence, watched the defense team not act on it, watched his client plead guilty, and now saying publicly that he says he told them privately because no one listened. He framed his decision to speak in terms of what he called extraordinary exculpatory evidence that was not being brought to light. He said information was being misstated and buried by both sides. He said in 3 decades of forensic work, he has never divulged confidential or case-sensitive material outside his professional scope. Now again, it's him using the word exculpatory. Evidence bag, chain of custody, when the police department are telling you we don't rely on pen and paper anymore, it's all scanned in, isn't exactly an exculpatory piece of evidence. It's you not understanding how their logging system functions and kind of making a mountain out of a molehill, or it's not even a molehill, because if everything's digital, then that piece of paper on those bags doesn't mean shit. So you have a defense team saying their own expert broke his agreement and is speaking recklessly. You have an expert saying the defense team is trying to silence legitimate forensic concerns. You have law enforcement saying the procedures were sound. You have a former FBI agent publishing a book that lays out evidence questions that were never adjudicated. And you have 4 families who were told this chapter of their lives was finished. And then there's this. According to the spokesman review, Taylor and Massoth are scheduled to give a paid 2.5-hour presentation at the Idaho Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers annual event titled Lessons Learned from Koberger. Attendees are reportedly required to pledge to keep all information confidential. Yeah, have a big old conference in a conference room with hundreds of people and sign this piece of paper. That keeps everybody quiet. the antiquatedness of our thinking these days of like what your signature even means. Like it's 1890 and it's a sacred bond between you and whoever you're giving it to. It doesn't mean shit. Let's stop pretending it does. So the defense team that publicly condemned Turvey for speaking about the case is also preparing to speak about the case. Just behind closed doors to a paying audience under confidentiality rules they control. That's the part that should sit with you the longest. I'm not saying you can't do that. Just saying, good luck with your confidentiality. And why are we even arguing about confidentiality in this case anymore? It's done. Koberger pled guilty on July 2nd of 2025, four counts of first-degree murder and one count of burglary. He was sentenced on July 23rd, 25 to four consecutive life terms plus 10 years on the burglary charge. No possibility of parole. He waived all rights to appeal. He offered no explanation for why he did what he did. He identified no motive. He provided no new information. The murder weapon, a K-bar-style knife, has never been recovered. Investigators never established a direct connection between Koberger and Annie of his four victims. And now, instead of silence, instead of closure, the people who built the defense are tearing it apart in public while the families of Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, Zana Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin watch from the other side of a grief that has no expiration date. The question in this case is not whether Brian Koberger is guilty. He stood in that courtroom and said the word himself four times, one for each life he took. The question is what the system owes the people it's supposed to serve, the families, the public, the process itself. And when the evidence underneath that plea was never tested, never challenged, and never really explained, because Turvey's claim it may be valid, it may be overstated, it may be absolutely nothing, they may fall apart into the kind of cross-examination that never happened. But the reason we don't know the answer to any of that is because the system that was supposed to provide those answers chose a plea deal instead of a trial. And now the only people interrogating the evidence are doing it in book deals and newspaper interviews and podcasts outside the one arena where it actually counts. The families deserved finality. The public deserves transparency. And right now, those two things are pulling in opposite directions, driven apart by the very people who were supposed to be on the same side. Your thoughts in the comments section and on Substack and YouTube. Is it anything? Is it a big nothing burger? Is there any weight to any of this? To me, a lot of this gets explained away pretty quick when you're talking about the chain of custody. And they're like, yeah, we don't do that anymore. It's all digital. Like anything on that piece of paper, yeah, it may have all been written down once because somebody may have just been transcribing it from the digital to that. I don't know. It seems like we have an explanation, but, you know, that doesn't make for a good book when your red flags that you think are pretty big get explained away pretty quick. But it used to be like this. Yeah, it used to be, but that's not how they do it. So what you're arguing isn't really an issue. I don't know. Your thoughts in the comments section. There's no right or wrong. I'm curious to hear it. All right, we'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? they're also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.